of the
It's 19:30 UTC on Thursday, December 14th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
The outcome of the ZANU-PF Special Congress tomorrow, I believe that General Chiwenga is likely to emerge as the vice president.
That was Mulungisi Dube, a political and social commentator discussing Friday's ZANU-PF Special Party Congress. We'll have more on that story coming up. Good evening. I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere on VOA's Zimbabwe Today.
Zimbabwe's ruling party, ZANU-PF, is set to hold a special congress. It will map a way forward for their party and confirm Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa as the party president, first secretary and presidential candidate for 2018. Reporter Kudzai Zinawashe has the report.
A few months back, when Robert Mugabe still had a grip on power, ZANU-PF's special congress was meant to elbow his then-vice president Emmerson Mnangagwa out. But that's changed. Tomorrow the congress is kicking off with a different agenda, and Mnangagwa will preside over the meeting. Eldred Masunungure is a political analyst.
This is an extraordinary congress. The extraordinary character of the congress suggests that, in fact, it means that it will deal with the few agenda items that the leadership has identified. I think most people will be looking forward to the appointment of the VP.
President Mnangagwa is expected to announce vice president who will deputize him. Mlungisi Dube is a political and social commentator.
The outcome of the ZANU-PF Special Congress tomorrow, I believe that General Chiwenga is likely to emerge as the vice president. We are also likely to see the war veterans and other key Lacoste members coming out victorious in family control of the party. We could also expect that one or two people based in the diaspora could be incorporated into the highest decision-making organs of the party.
Masunungure says the Congress will be a case of housekeeping in the party. The other issues are a matter of endorsements, and there is a likelihood that policy will not be discussed at the gathering.
The other issues, I think they are a matter of confirmation, confirming what the Central Committee resolved, which is to endorse President as the first secretary and the president of the party, and as the 2018 ZANU-PF candidate for the presidential election. And of course, the expulsions and the suspensions will also be top of that hierarchy of agenda items.
Because of this, Masunungure says people should not expect policy changes because it is not on the agenda.
I don't think anything new will come out of that Congress. I don't think there will be major policy issues that will be discussed, but they are not on the agenda unless they are smuggled. As far as the official agenda, there are no major policy discussions, and therefore no major policy decisions should be expected to come out of that Congress.
Masunungure adds that policy changes were best showcased in the budget. That was recently presented in Parliament by the Finance Minister, Patrick Chinamasa. In Mugabe's era, he sometimes attempted to strike a gender and ethnic balance between his vice president. Dube says this would be difficult for Mnangagwa, as his appointments should impress the army and war veterans who were instrumental to his rise to power. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
A former Zimbabwean finance minister was arraigned in court today on fresh charges of corruption and bribery. Ignatius Chombo was detained by the military after it took over the government in November, ending former President Robert Mugabe's 37-year rule. Reporter Frank Chikore has more details from Harare.
The prosecution accuses former finance minister Ignatius Chombo of failing to prevent corruption during his tenure as local government minister. The charge emanates from a government-sponsored housing program dubbed Operation Garikai, in which the state alleges that the former finance minister allocated residential stands on a farm owned by a private developer. the bribery charges against the embattled former finance chief who served under ex-Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe arose from the sale of another residential property in the suburban Harare town of Norton. The charges come from Zimbabwe's government corruption watchdog, which some critics say former President Robert Mugabe crippled during his years in office. The new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, has vowed to crack down on corruption. Chombo's attorney, Love Moma Duku, tells VOA the new charges are baseless.
Well, he's just facing two more charges. The first one, they call it prevention of corruption. They allege that the people that were resettled in Whitecliff under the Garigai Hlalani Kuhle program, government program, Chombo had put those people in a farm that was unlawfully acquired, and that was an abuse of office. And then the second one is they're alleging bribery. They say that he has a stand in Norton, and he got and bought it from a person that he had promised that he would use his government position to evict some illegal settlers from the same property in the Garigai Hlalani Kuhle.
The defense lawyer confirmed that his client remains free on bail on the fresh charges.
Yes, the court has agreed to remand him in this particular matter on the same bail conditions as the one he's currently on.
Last week, Chombo was in court on charges of corruption and abuse of office. He is out on stringent bail conditions that require him to report 3 times a day to the police. During his bail hearing last week, Chombo told the court that he was tortured while in military detention following his capture during last month's military takeover. Following Mugabe's resignation, the ruling ZANU-PF party named Mnangagwa his former deputy to complete Mugabe's term of office. Frank Chikowore for VOA News, Harare.
As part of his anti-corruption pledge, President Emmerson Mnangagwa told the ZANU-PF Central Committee meeting that he has a list of names of all the people who have taken large sums of money out of the country. If these people do not return the cash by next March, he will promise to name names. There's a lot of reaction on social media to that threat.
Tamara Mutoa says, "You go, Mr. President. Now we want the action."
Chino says, externalizing our economy / money should attract a jail sentence. Naming and shaming should be followed by prosecution and jail.
SKQ said, "I said this amnesty doesn't work. If he had the names in the first place, why is Chombo the only one arrested? Not just once, but twice. Now that nobody is joining the amnesty charade, he's threatening to name and shame."
Baba Jere says, "Shame does not exist to ZANU thieves. Arrest and lock them up."
Clive says, "Don't end there. Some have no shame. There will be nothing that would be nothing to them. Take legal action if possible to get money back. To get back money suspected to be proceeds of theft."
Tonderai says, "Is he clean himself? The guy was even implicated by the UN in a diamond scandal in the DRC.
Innocent says, "How many of his cabinet ministers and ZANU-PF pals will survive this investigation? He needs to start with the threats in ZANU-PF first, because those are the people who have been looting."
Some Zimbabweans and Americans are concerned that President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government may fail to live up to expectations, with indications that it may instead be more apprehensive than the ousted President Robert Mugabe's government. This week, members of Zimbabwe's opposition and U.S. State Department expert testified before a Senate subcommittee on the way forward. VOA's Gibbs Dube spoke with participants at the hearing and has this report.
Most of the concerns stem from the presence of the military on the streets in most urban areas and Mnangagwa's links to the former president. The IBT of the opposition People's Democratic Party says the military's involvement in Zimbabwean politics is worrying millions of people in the country.
So the government that was elected by the people of Zimbabwe, and it's also a government that is coming within the context of a military intervention. Our calls for a return to legitimacy are justified within the rule of law, and we hope that we will have the chance to have election and electoral reforms that will lead the country to an uncontested free and fair election.
BT says electoral reforms are key in ensuring that Zimbabwe transitions to a democratic state.
Issue of electoral reforms, we have to make demands of the same. The new authorities also know that they will not get away with an election that will not be free and fair. The international community is looking out, Zimbabweans are looking out. The battle now is about legitimacy. The battle now is about credibility. The battle now is about the capacity to change. And Mr. Mnangagwa knows that he needs the international community. But the international community will not be there without him walking the talk.
He believes that there should be honest engagements between the Mnangagwa and President Donald Trump's administration, which will benefit Zimbabweans and Americans. The United States imposed targeted sanctions on former President Robert Mugabe and his colleagues following claims of electoral fraud and violation of human rights. Stephanie Sullivan of the U.S. Department of State says the United States is not shifting its engagement policies on Zimbabwe following the removal of Mugabe from power.
It's early days, and at the moment there is no plan to change anything related to the sanctions regime. There's some very specific things that we would like to see happen before we even consider revisiting that. And for example, there have been some very interesting rhetorical commitments and expressions of intention in recent speeches. We really need to see concrete reforms, both economic and political, on the ground.
Sullivan says U.S. wants Zimbabwe to conduct free and fair elections in order to transform the nation's current harsh economic political situation. Congressman Senator Jake Fleck concurs, noting that there are serious concerns over Mnangagwa's links to the Zimbabwe Defense Forces.
There's concern that the change, that the coup will just lead to continued oppression like we've seen before. We want to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Flake says only free and fair elections will shape future relations between USA and Zimbabwe. But ZANU-PF activist Frank Kuni has dismissed these concerns, saying a lot is happening right now in Zimbabwe under Mnangagwa's government.
Already reforms are undergoing. The electoral law is being reformed and is being realigned with the constitution of Zimbabwe. As we speak, it was introduced in parliament last Thursday.
Kuni stresses that security forces are set to return to the barracks when they've accomplished their mission.
Once they are done with their duties, they'll definitely go. People must also acknowledge the fact that they are on the streets on the orders of the president. The president is the only person who can order the army to do what they are doing. And once he is satisfied that they have met the objectives that he gave them, they will go back to their barracks. They are not the police. They are there to assist the police. And the police, as everybody knows in Zimbabwe, they were so corrupt.
The U.S. Congress held a meeting on Zimbabwe on Tuesday, focusing on the future of the country following the removal of Mugabe from office by the army in conjunction with the ruling party ZANU-PF. Reporting for Zimbabwe Today, this is Kip Stube in Washington, D.C.
Without mentioning any country by name, Zimbabwe's new foreign affairs minister today appeared to be responding to the U.S. Senate hearing earlier this week. He said his country will not allow the West to dictate its policies, and no country should dictate how others conduct foreign policy. Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from Harare.
In a hurriedly called address to diplomats accredited to Zimbabwe, new Foreign Affairs Minister Sibusiso Moyo said there are, quote, no angels, unquote, that should dictate any country's foreign policy. The address was delivered after Zimbabwe's opposition and civic leaders testified Tuesday before the U.S. Congress and asked the international community to push Harare to ensure free and fair elections. Moyo said President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government, which came into power last month with the backing of the army, had started reaching out to Western countries like the United States and Britain to normalize relations strained under former President Robert Mugabe's administration.
We seek, therefore, an honest, respectful, and forthright dialogue that will let go the past and explore and pursue mutually beneficial economic opportunities. We must respect one another, and of course, we are not going to be lecturing anyone, nor do we also expect the vice versa. Our rapprochement will thus be characterized by new vibrant trade and economic relations.
The former general said Zimbabwe would respect all trade agreements the previous administration had reneged on. He said he looked forward to countries like Brazil, China, Russia, and India to continue assisting Zimbabwe as it negotiates with the West, which imposed sanctions on some ruling ZANU-PF officials in 2002 following reports of election rigging and human rights abuses. Without mentioning any country, Moyo said,
an egocentric pursuit of foreign policy would be both blind and defeatist. And in pursuit of common goals, we cherish sincere and respectful discourse. Issues such as human rights, disarmament, development, and gender should not really be conflictual, nor even accusatory, because we should be cognizant at all times that there are no angels, nor devils in this common endeavor. As we all fall short in one way or the other. But what matters is that we are determined and principled and spirited to deal with those issues.
Moyo said Zimbabwe's next elections, expected by mid-2018, would be, quote, free, fair, transparent, and violence-free, unquote. But the director of the International Commission of Jurists in Africa, Arnold Tsunga, says a lot has to be done for that to happen.
The expectation, as understood by the International Commission of Jurists, is that the new government needs to do everything that it can to create a basis on which there can be free, fair, and credible elections in the next 8 months so that there can be a full return to civilian authority. So which means there are a number of things that need to be done, including the harmonization of electoral laws to make them fully compliant with the 2013 constitution.
The International Commission of Jurists has been in Zimbabwe assessing the human rights situation. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Former President Robert Mugabe has been seeking medical care in Singapore. News agency says he arrived in the East Asian city earlier this week and on Wednesday met with doctors. Mugabe, who is 93 years old, has frequently visited Singapore for vacation and medical treatment. His wife, Grace Mugabe, has become known for her shopping sprees in the city's posh shopping centers. This trip is Mugabe's first since he resigned from office last month, after the military took control of the government.
South Africa's courts have hit the country's embattled president with several stinging rebukes just days before the ruling party meets to select a new party leader. That puts the African National Congress in an increasingly perilous and exciting position, VOA's Anita Powell explains.
In coming days, 5,000 delegates of the African National Congress will meet in Johannesburg to anoint a successor to party leader, South African President Jacob Zuma. For years, he has wallowed in serious, mounting corruption allegations. And just this week, the High Court in Pretoria censured him for trying to evade corruption investigations. As a result of the scandals, Zuma has deeply divided the party, with some top party officials openly calling for him to step down as president. Two figures are officially in the running to replace Zuma as ANC leader: Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa and Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, a party stalwart and experienced diplomat who for 16 years was married to Zuma. But others may emerge when voting begins this weekend. The ANC has won a majority in every national poll since the beginning of democracy in 1994, meaning the new leader is likely to be a strong presidential candidate in 2019. VOA has spoken to numerous analysts and experts, and the only thing they have agreed on is this: anything can happen here. Analyst Ibrahim Fakir says he thinks such uncertainty is a sign of political maturity. He refused to pick a winner.
If I knew, I'd be sailing on the Caribbean. And the uncertainty and the fluidity of it is part of the democratic process. So I think we should accept that because it's a democratic process, because democracy is about contestation, is about competition, because you have competing visions, you have competing candidates, you have competing individuals. The context is fluid, the outcome is uncertain, and that's how it is in democracy.
Zuma supports Dlamini Zuma, and that, says analyst Ralph Matega, could work two ways.
Whoever is being supported or anointed by President Jacob Zuma to lead the ANC, one way or another, it will contribute to some form of extension of his legacy. So members of ANC will have to reflect on that. The court hearing from that point of view will certainly be negative for him. But I do think that upon a very closer observation as to what is happening within the party, there is already a narrative that is set to ignore such kind of decision, such as the court decision against President Jacob Zuma.
Matega also refused to predict a winner, but said that in a way, the leadership contest is only one of the ANC's worries. The conference has yet to begin, and already some analysts are predicting the party schism might cause the event to collapse entirely. Matega says the ANC needs to try to avoid that.
If the ANC cannot hold a conference properly and elect a leader in a free, fair and open manner, it would be quite difficult to trust the ANC to do the same thing within the country.
The conference begins Saturday in Soweto. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The United Nations says humanitarian needs in refugee camps in Cameroon are increasing, exceeding the means available to take care of the growing number of refugees. But some of the refugees have empowered themselves by making use of resources around them to earn a living for their families. Moki Edwin Kinzeka visited the Gado refugee camp in eastern Cameroon, where 200 refugee women have developed a fish pond by a river and are supplying fish not only to people in need in the camp, but to the surrounding villages.
More than 100 women sing here on the side of a river at Gado near the United Nations refugee camp. It is a day of harvest and many refugees have come to buy. Among the fish farmers is 31-year-old Christine Mbula, a Central African refugee who has been living in the camp for 2 years. Her laughs are indicative of how happy she is to raise money from the sale of the fish and then carry some of her catch home for her family. Bula says she has come to the river to collect and sell fish so as to help her family. She says the activity has kept them going. Christine says she had been jobless and poor and could not take care of her 3 children. She lost her husband in the fighting in CAR and relied on food aid from the United Nations, which she says was never enough. Boniface Nyadu, head of the World Food Programme office in the eastern Cameroon town of Betoa, says the Inland Fish Aquaculture Programme was started in the area in June 2017 by the World Food Programme to attend to the needs of CAR refugees and their host communities. He says they initiated the project when they noticed that the locality had high fishing potential and at the same time there was insufficient food and a deficit in protein needed by the host communities and refugees. He says they brought groups of 200 refugees and host community members who work in the fishing area for 6 months, harvest and sell the fish, and then create their own fish ponds to help them raise revenue and protein. The refugees and host community members receive business training, emphasizing savings and loan best practices, technical support that includes how to produce low-cost fish and pellets, and other innovative ideas from the World Food Programme. The host communities are involved in efforts to stop any potential conflict that may arise from using water and other resources. The WFP says the savings and loan program in Gado is part of a new response to the massive displacement of people from CAR to Cameroon and the effects it has on host communities. Barely 1,000 CAR refugees were here at Gado at the beginning of 2017. Today, close to 25,000 people are seeking refuge and trying to survive as tensions in the Central African state continue. Allegra Bauche, resident coordinator of the UN system in Cameroon, says the aquaculture program was initiated to support the refugees and empower them rather than have them be dependent on resources that are overstretched and slow to come.
Our response is underfunded. We need to remember about the refugees population and the impact this has on the host communities, and we need to be able to do more. Overall, the humanitarian response in Cameroon is 40% funded. When it comes to refugees, that figure goes down to 20%. There's not much we can do with 20% of our funding. After 3 years, what the people are asking us is to give them more long-term support, to start putting them on a path of recovery and of development.
The United Nations raised only $148 million of the $390 million it needed up to the end of last September. The UN says by January, the needs of the refugees will increase to $498 million. CAR plunged into turmoil in 2013 when the government of the majority Christian nation was overthrown by Muslim rebels, setting off a wave of sectarian fighting. Christians, fearing reprisal attacks from the Muslim ex-rebels who controlled Central African Republic, fled for safety. At least 2.2 million are finding it difficult to feed themselves, and in May of this year, the UN Refugee Agency said that there were more than 500,000 internally displaced persons in the country. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Gado, Eastern Cameroon.
Us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kudzinai Mutetwa.
And I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Debele broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as on our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.